Hello, and thank you for joining us again for another episode of Sink or Swim. I'll be the host today, Alvin Nguyen, and our topic today is gap years and things we wish we knew before starting medical school. So today I have the very intelligent, very wise, and genuine Nick Trainer. Woo! Thank you for joining us today, Nick.
Hey, Alvin. Thanks for having me. So yeah, I'm Nick Trainer. I'm also a fourth year at NSUMD, and welcome to the Sink or Swim podcast.
So we're very lucky because yesterday we had Thanksgiving. We got a nice meal. And we are fully charged to have this very wonderful podcast, and hopefully will be helpful for a lot of you listening. So let's hear a little bit about Nick. Nick, why did you choose to pursue medical school? Why did you want to be a doctor in the first place?
Yeah, so I actually chose to go to medical school because originally I wasn't wanting to pursue medicine because I have a brother who's in medicine, and I kind of copied a lot of things he did in life, and I told myself that I wouldn't copy him in this. But then in college I actually was reading my biology textbooks and found out that a lot of the information I was learning could be applied to medicine, and I found that very interesting, so I thought I might pursue it. And lo and behold, when you find out that you want to do medicine, while you're going through the process, you kind of hit some roadblocks along the way.
Yeah, that's so true.
And I actually did my college in 3 years, and that wasn't really enough time to build a good medical school application, so that ended up forcing me to take a few gap years along the way to build up my resume.
Oh, okay. When did you realize you wanted to be a physician?
I think I realized I wanted to be a physician.
Is that during high school, or?
Not really during high school, actually. Like I said, when I originally applied to college, I kind of foresaw myself working in a lab. For the people that know me, they may say that fits because I'm a little bit awkward, but
whatever works.
Yeah, so I was actually volunteering at a cancer center, and there's a lot of people that you meet along the way. And someone that I volunteered with, she was super sweet. She was an older lady. She actually lost her husband to cancer. Mm-hmm. And so she would go around and actually use the money they would give for lunch. She would use it to buy snacks for the volunteers, or the patients, and I found that super sweet, and she would always talk to the patients and kind of get to know them and learn their stories, and she's an extremely feisty lady. So
those are the best.
Yeah. So I actually kind of took a lot of inspiration from her and decided that was kind of something I wanted to pursue, was helping out these people.
Wow. Yeah, I remember that. I remember, like, when I first met Nick, he told me he wanted to do oncology. So now, like, with this little story, that kind of makes sense. Is that how you got inspired to become an oncologist at the beginning?
Yeah, actually. So I originally wanted to pursue oncology. It fit in with my background. Like I said earlier, lab rat kind of background. And my background is in molecular biology, so it kind of fit with oncology. And I wanted to use my molecular biology background
that makes sense. Yeah.
With a lot of, like, the tailored medicine that's going on nowadays. And it's actually kind of a long way to get there, but I got there in the end.
Hey, if you make it, you make it. A win is a win.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we take those.
Yeah. So that's great. It's great that, like, you can have inspirations anywhere. Anyone can really impact your life and make you get into medicine. But the truth is, it's your own calling. If you want to become a physician, only you can make that choice. So with that being said, I remember Nick saying that he took a few gap years. So for those listeners who don't exactly know what a gap year is, can you explain what that is and, like, whether it's advantageous to take one or?
So for those interested in medicine, you either know about the process or you find out about it way along the way. Mm-hmm. And when I decided I wanted to do medicine, it was in college. And for those who don't know, and for those who do, getting into medical school is very difficult.
Yeah,
it's a long process. You need a lot of prerequisites. Mm-hmm. And so kind of taking a gap year is what some people end up having to do, because you either don't have the prerequisites, you don't have a solid application, you feel like you need more exposure, and honestly, a lot of people take gap years to figure out whether or not med school is something they actually want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So med school is a 4-year commitment, residency is a minimum 3-year commitment.
Yeah.
And then some people do fellowships afterwards for another couple years, honestly. So
yeah.
At a certain point, you're spending about a decade doing medical education.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's kind of scary at times, you know? So some people take those gap years to figure out whether it's something they actually want to do.
Yeah.
In my case, I decided kind of late on that I wanted to do medical school. And I had to build up my resume. So
yeah.
I ended up being forced to take a few gap years. And just to kind of talk about a little bit about the process itself, you kind of apply to medical school during your junior year for the year after.
Yeah.
And so when you take 3 years to finish your undergrad, that's my second year of college. And I don't know if anyone here remembers what they were doing their second year of college, but you're still trying to figure out what's going on in life at that point. So.
That is very true. I second that.
So that kind of ended up being why I took gap years. And so gap years are actually years between undergrad and medical school where you're either working a job or volunteering. Some people do some soul searching. They'll go on missions trips. And then some people just need the prerequisites for medical school. Like some medical schools require a statistics course.
Mm-hmm.
Some people come from non-traditional medical school or non-traditional backgrounds where they don't really have a pre-med degree. I think one of our classmates has a statistics degree, actually.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, we come from all different kinds of backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the joy of medical school. You meet people from everywhere.
That's very true. I also want to add, if you want to go straight from undergrad to medical school, that I admire those people, because during your studies in undergrad you have to also take the MCAT and apply to medical schools, which I can't even imagine, because I was being swamped while I was in undergrad, right? They had to apply in their last year, something like that.
So it's kind of crazy, honestly.
Yeah,
like you apply a lot earlier than you think you should.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's honestly a case of you're literally trying to finish up your senior year research.
Uh-huh.
And then you're doing interviews for medical school.
That is wild.
And honestly, in medical school, it never ends too. Last year of medical school, you're doing interviews for residencies.
That's true. So you're just repeating the cycle.
Yeah, it never ends, honestly.
So I also took a gap year. I actually took 2 gap years. And just like Nick, I just wanted to pretty much buffer or solidify my resume for medical school. I felt like my GPA was competitive, but my MCAT could have been better. I'll admit that. So I did a lot of extracurricular activities, but I'll get to that. First, I want to hear more from Nick. What did you do during your gap years to make your application stronger?
Yeah, so during my gap year, I actually worked a job as a scribe. And while I was working as a scribe, I got to document pretty much patient visits for primary care and cardiology.
Mm-hmm.
And while working as a scribe, I actually got promoted to training scribes as well.
Mm, wow.
So I pretty much trained any oncoming scribes so that they would be able to document these outpatient visits for the site that we were at.
Nice.
And they forced me to kind of train with all of the physicians so that I knew their styles.
Yeah.
And from there, I was also volunteering on my days off. They didn't really have any full-time scribes. They had us all part-time, but I'll be darned if they didn't try to get me as full-time as possible, or they would make me work 39 hours a week and say, as long as we don't hit that 40-hour a week minimum, he's not full-time yet.
Wow.
So I was great, thanks. So there wasn't much time to find volunteering, but honestly, it's something that if you want to do, you really have to find the time and make the time. And
that's
that
so true.
Rings true throughout medical school, in my opinion. If you find anything that you think is worth the time, you have to make the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually volunteered at my church's food pantry. It's something that I had been doing since I was a teenager.
Nice.
And I found out, this was during the COVID pandemic, that they distributed boxes on Tuesday mornings to those in need.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would take the Tuesday mornings to go down there and help organize the boxes and put them in people's cars.
Wow.
You kind of meet people from all walks of life, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
It helped me with my Spanish a little bit.
Hey, there you go. And it showed.
Yeah, a little bit. And then, I'm not going to lie, there's a funny story where I was putting a box in someone's car and the hatchback was not very good at keeping the hatchback
closed,
part of the trunk open.
Oh,
okay. So it fell on my neck.
Oh, my God.
So, be careful if you're ever putting boxes in someone's car. You should know the person and know their car.
That's true.
But from there, I actually was trying to get time off to go volunteer because it was important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And since I was trained with all the doctors, I was kind of given any shifts that no one wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept being given a shift Tuesday mornings.
Yeah.
And it kind of forced me to decide whether or not I actually wanted to continue scribing. And yeah. I valued the volunteering more at that point because it was something that meant a lot to me personally.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied for a job at Publix and I started working as a pharmacy technician.
Wow, nice.
And so for the last year of my gap years, I worked as a pharmacy technician. And then for a little stint there, I worked as a bagger cashier at Publix. Mm-hmm. And I gave a 2 months notice to my job as a scribe.
Wow.
You give 2 months notice when you're a scribe, by the way, because they have to onboard scribes, and they mm-hmm. have to be trained, and they have to be approved by the hospital to work. So if you just leave mm-hmm. with the typical, like, 1 to 2 week notice, they're kind of
yeah.
left with no one to fill your shifts.
Mm-hmm. It's courtesy, just to let them know.
Yeah, honestly, it's something that I did because they did a lot for me.
Yeah.
I understand that for a lot of people, that may seem kind of silly, but mm-hmm. I was working 2 jobs for a 2 month period.
Yeah.
Where I would get off work as a scribe, and then I would drive to Publix and have to change in the parking lot
mm-hmm.
so that I could go in and be a bagger or a cashier mm-hmm. for the evening. And then I would go home, go to bed, and then do it all over again. So
wow.
That was the fun times.
Yeah.
And then when I was a pharmacy technician, we actually started up a new pharmacy.
Wow.
So they built a new store, and that's why they actually hired me. I don't know if they would have hired me otherwise, but they sent me to the new pharmacy to kind of help establish it.
Mm-hmm.
Had to call patients and call physicians
mm-hmm.
and call other pharmacies to try and get prescriptions transferred.
Wow.
And then since it was during COVID too, we also had to deal with the COVID vaccinations coming out. So
wow.
Busy, to say the least.
Yeah, that's crazy. He was working during COVID. As you heard, he was working 2 jobs for a 2 month period. That's intense. Just trying to make that, trying to make himself more competitive for medical school. What's interesting is, so you would say your scribe and like your shadowing experience are combined because you got to work alongside doctors, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if you felt the same kind of stress that I felt, where I didn't have any doctors in the family. So it was really hard to like shadow or get some kind of job that got me close to a doctor to kind of see what they do on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like you had that struggle in finding that?
So I agree. It's very fortunate working as a scribe. You kind of get mm-hmm. pseudo shadowing experience.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, you're in all the patient visits, so you're kind
yeah.
of seeing what they do. Since I originally was interested in oncology, though, I definitely had to find an oncologist to shadow, which it's an enlightening experience. I actually got to shadow both a medical oncologist and a radiation oncologist.
Wow.
So I would say when you're shadowing an oncologist, you kind of you realize how depressing it can be at times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're going to lose patients, especially
yeah.
in oncology, and it's going to be way out of your hands. There's not really much that you can do. And, I mean, you're going to try your best, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And there's always new advancements, and there's always new hopes being created for people. But a lot of my shadowing actually was because the physicians that I was working with personally emailed
mm-hmm.
them. And I'm not going to lie, when a physician emails another physician, you're more likely to get a response.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If you're a random Joe Schmo off the street.
Who is this guy?
calling and being like, hey, is there any chance I can shadow one of your physicians? I'm not going to lie. When you go to shadow a physician, there's a large chance that you're going to have to do onboarding,
mm-hmm.
which means you have to get, like, a PPD to see if you have tuberculosis.
Yeah.
You have to get your shot records in. You have to fill out a bunch of paperwork saying you're not going to break HIPAA.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult, actually, to find a lot of these shadowing experiences.
Absolutely.
So scribing can serve as kind of a good bridge to getting those mm-hmm. experiences, but also getting experience documenting,
mm-hmm.
which when you're a physician, you do that every day. You also get a lot of experience with the physician one-on-one where they can kind of educate you. And I'm not going to lie, some physicians are better at educating than others, but... a lot of the physicians I worked with, fortunately enough, were willing to teach me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it came in handy a lot because I learned a lot about the medications that they were prescribing, what they're for, the different conditions. And when I was in pharmacy, I was able to teach new pharmacy technicians what was going on. Because, I mean, for those who aren't in the medical field, a lot of these medications, they just sound like gibberish.
Mm-hmm.
So
they still do, by the way.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, some of the names are better than others, and I mean, once you learn the suffixes, they start to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But it's useful to know what they're for when you're in the pharmacy, because patients are gonna come up and you're gonna get some random configuration
mm-hmm.
of lisinopril that you've never heard before, and that they're gonna say, I need that refilled, and you're gonna say, excuse me, what did you just sell me? So it's useful, honestly. Good experience.
Mm-hmm.
Would recommend.
Do you have any advice for anyone who wants to shadow but doesn't have those, like, aren't fortunate enough to have connections with any kind of doctor?
So, I think I'll give the same recommendation that I would give people in medical school
mm-hmm.
who are, like, looking for research or anything like that. A cold call will go a long way.
Mm-hmm.
Or a cold email. So... it's honestly one of those times where if you never send an email or if you never make the call,
mm-hmm.
it'll never happen.
You miss every shot you don't take.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a case of you really should just call the place and say, I am interested in medical school. I'm interested in shadowing one of your physicians. And a lot of physicians come from backgrounds where they like to educate people. That's
yeah.
what they do on a daily basis. A lot of them would be more than willing to take someone who's just going to be shadowing them, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the physician, you may end up getting a lot more than you bargained for with shadowing, where
mm-hmm.
they could talk your ear off, honestly.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, to become a physician, a lot of times, you're seeing patients day in and day out.
Yeah.
And you're talking to them about stuff that you're interested in, and the patients probably aren't so much interested in, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the nuances of diseases and different conditions. Physicians love to talk about that kind of stuff. But
oh, yeah, absolutely.
If they talk to a patient about it, it'll go right over their head. But, a tiny little pre-med student
mm-hmm.
may want to hear about this kind of thing, honestly, because they're going to be trying to throw themselves into it for the next decade of their life. So a lot of them would enjoy that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So it really can't hurt to just call or email.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I just want to add on to that. So for me, I also took a gap year and I was working three to four jobs. I was working as a student researcher for like Alzheimer's disease, just trying to find the biomarkers. You go to any kind of undergrad, there's like a lot of research in almost every university. So you can always apply for those. I was also working as an EMT. That's emergency medical, emergency medical technician. Wow, I forgot the T. Yeah. So it pretty much you drive the ambulance for those of you who don't know, and then you go transfer the patients. You do CPR sometimes, depending on the call. I worked as a behavioral therapist for children with autism, where we pretty much try to decrease maladaptive behaviors and we try to increase like more positive behaviors. Especially children who like had autism or other neurodevelopmental disorders. And lastly, I worked as a lead medication technician. That's someone who just assists people with memory impairments, for example, dementia, with giving them their medication so they don't forget. So all of these jobs that I had, in some way, even though I wasn't working directly with a physician, there was some kind of network that I could talk to somebody who knew a doctor. With the EMT, I was always going to a hospital. I would see a doctor. I just have a very light conversation there and ask, like, hey, can I shadow you? Or as like a medication technician, there was a geriatrician that always came in. And whenever I saw him, I would greet him. And eventually I had the courage to ask him, hey, do you allow pre-meds to shadow you? And he said yes. So I was lucky enough to get shadowing experience with him. So in any field you go in, hopefully there's some kind of connection. Hopefully you see a physician. And if not, there's a physician that like at least walks by the place you work at, and you can always try to get connected with them. So I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, honestly, if you have connections, you use them. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how the game works, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of curious, Alvin.
Yeah.
So how do you feel like these jobs helped you prepare for medical school?
I believe it definitely gave me the experience of just, I think resilience was the biggest thing. It made me realize, wow, these hours are tough. I'm doing a lot, and I'm also, like, I was also just studying for the MCAT too during my gap years. So it made me build the resilience, the thicker skin to like just endure those hours of study. The emergency, being an EMT definitely like inspired me to become an emergency physician. Working with the elderly in a assisted living kind of like showed me like what compassion is, empathy, and how to have that like patient bedside care. So that was very important. And yeah, with all the experiences, I believe that I walked into medical school already having worked. And something that was very surprising to me was when I entered medical school, there was several classmates of mine who have never had a job before. Like, have never actually interacted with a patient. And that blew my mind. So their first interaction was with a standardized patient in medical school. It's like, no, it never goes down like this. It's always more complicated. But it definitely helped me prepare, like, to have a conversation, to just be down to earth with the patient and really understand like what to do when things get distressful, when they start crying, when they get angry. And those people skills, really, you don't learn until you actually experience it. And I'm very grateful I experienced that before medical school.
Yeah, honestly, a lot of these jobs before medical school give you a lot of learned experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think with us talking about gap years, the question has to be asked.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I don't think I was mentally ready to be a physician to enter medical school without the gap years. I needed that time to just like explore life. I traveled too beforehand. I found out this is definitely what I want to do. And I can't imagine myself taking the MCAT, applying to medical school while still studying my undergrad. That was way too much at one time for me. Maybe Nick could have done it. He's a genius. But me, that's definitely not. Definitely wasn't feasible.
Yeah, I agree, honestly. So
agree with the genius part?
No. So I would say, honestly, everyone in our class is a genius in their own regard. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people like to accuse me of being very smart, but you can be smart in different aspects, in my opinion. So that's where I stand on that statement. But mm-hmm. In terms of like whether or not I enjoyed taking the gap years and whether or not I'd do it again, honestly, it's a great experience,
mm-hmm.
And it can be disheartening at times when you feel like you're not going to reach your goal at the end, and when one gap year turns into two or turns into three,
mm-hmm.
But I can honestly say at the end of the day, that resilience will stand out.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, if your goal at the end of the day is to become a doctor, who cares if it takes an extra, like, 5 to 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
And who cares if you start when you're 30? Because, I mean, doctors, at the end of the day, are people who have a ton of experience. And I don't think anyone would look twice if their physician was, like, 40 mm-hmm. or 50.
That's so true.
Because, I mean, lived experience really shows in the people that have taken gap years versus those who kind of shot straight through.
Yeah.
And that's not to even remotely say that the people who shot straight through are unqualified. Those people, honestly, are probably the most qualified to be in medical school and get through residency because they knew what they wanted, mm-hmm. and they worked towards it. And I have a lot of respect for those people because, honestly, the me in undergrad and the me now are completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not going to lie, I was the type of person to probably sleep through an 8 a.m. course in undergrad.
That's true.
If you do that in medical school, or if you sleep through a scheduled patient encounter, or if there's an emergency when you're mm-hmm. a doctor, it's a problem, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I would say a lot of the gap years kind of gave me experience mm-hmm. and helped me grow and kind of helped me mature as a person.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you would like to... Like, if you go back in time, is there anything you would have done differently during your gap years? Maybe learn a new skill, extracurriculars, or anything like that?
So, I'm honestly the type of person where I'm gonna goof off.
Mm-hmm.
So, I wouldn't say there's, like, a random skill or extracurricular that I would have learned in that time. I did use that time to learn a little bit of Japanese.
Oh, wow.
So... I was using that time for fun things as well.
Mm-hmm. Did that Japanese help you?
No. I would say...
You heard it here first.
...that I have not seen a single Japanese patient my entire time in medical school.
We're also, like, located in Florida. So you can imagine how prominent the Japanese population is here.
Yeah. So another tip, like, little piece of advice. If you're planning on going to medical school in a place that there's a lot of bilingual... Mm-hmm. You should probably learn the second language,
yeah.
Not the 10th most common language, or I don't know how
yeah. it is down here. Uh-huh. Yeah, I would say something I wish I knew was Spanish, and that's not just because we're going to a medical school in Florida, where depending which hospital you go to, kind of like 90% Spanish-speaking only patients. Like Nick and I were very fortunate enough to go to Kendall together for internal medicine. And what percent would you say, like, the patients only spoke Spanish, Nick?
So, I don't want to say the stereotypical 99% answer.
it was up there.
90%.
Yeah.
We would walk into every room, and I think the first thing Alvin would say is, hablas ingles. And
please. There's hope.
Most of the time, they would say no.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be another case of, here we go again.
Uh-huh.
We have the two... Probably first year level Spanish speaking
mm-hmm. yep.
students.
That's true.
To get important medical information out of patients, and it's not a good mix in my opinion.
Yeah.
For good patient care, but it is a good mix for comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great because, like, I think what I noticed is even though we didn't speak Spanish, when they started hearing us struggle with Spanish, their English would come out. I noticed that. It's like, this is what I'm trying to say. It's like, oh, so you do speak English. It's like, no, I don't, but I know how to say this.
Oh, man. My favorite was when I was butchering a Spanish sentence, and then the guy in the corner of the room is like, in the most stereotypical Southern accent, is just mm-hmm. like, yeah, by the way, we speak English. And I was like, oh, thanks. Thanks for telling me.
I remember that, yeah. Clear as day. So, yeah, if I could go back Spanish... And I don't think it's just Florida. Anywhere you go in the United States, I think it's this, like, correct me if I'm wrong, it's like the second most spoken language in America.
It's, yeah, I would say second
yeah?
most. And
okay.
Honestly, I think ethnicity wise, Hispanic is mm-hmm. the majority. So,
yeah.
I mean, it really can't hurt living in the United States to know a little bit of Spanish.
Absolutely. If,
yeah.
Yeah, if I could go back, Spanish would definitely be something. I wish I knew, at least to a conversational level, like a basic level that you can communicate, like what's their past medical history, take a proper HPI. Yeah, that's one skill I wish. And also, if you're interested in anything, like playing guitar, playing piano, like during the interviews, if you get an interview for medical school, they already know you're competent enough. They saw your grades, they saw everything about you. It's very similar to like interviews we have right now for the programs. They know everything about you. They have it on paper. They say, okay, I know what school. I know what I know what grades they're getting. Now, this is the part, like, what makes you you? And if you don't have anything that makes you you, it's really hard to, like, stand out. Because after when they all sit at the round table and say, what do you think about Nick or Alvin? And they don't remember anything about you. That's where, like, the extracurriculars or the skills or any hidden talents you have or something you love to do. If it's collecting rocks, mention that. I think you should work on during your gap year.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's a case of, like, you're getting vibe checked in these mm-hmm. interviews for whether or not they can stand you as a person.
Yeah.
And
Make sure you're not a sociopath.
I would say there's not many sociopaths that get through medical school.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It's definitely a case of they have to be able to stand you.
Mm-hmm.
And medical school, there's long hours. There's going to be a lot of times where you're doing group projects and working with other people in your class.
Yeah.
You're going to be working with people who are working completely different career paths. Like,
yeah.
You work with pharmacists. You work with nurses. Mm. There's, like, scrub technicians. There's circulating nurses. Mm-hmm. You work with pretty much everyone in the hospital.
Yeah.
And they're really trying to make sure that you're a normal person.
Yeah.
So.
And that's hard as it is already.
Yeah. And it continues on throughout, like, your residency interviews, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Residency, you're stuck with these people for like 3 to 5 years, depending on what specialty you choose.
Yeah.
And I mean, some specialties you're literally closer with people than others, like
emergency, for example.
Yeah, you work with your emergency medicine co-residents like mm-hmm. on a daily basis, and you're gonna be up with them at 3 a.m.
That's right. That's
it's like the 3 a.m. test.
The 3 a.m. test.
Yeah, it's like, could I stand this person at 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. if I'm stuck with them and there's like a slow day or something, you know?
Yeah.
And like, imagine being in a path lab or a radiology reading room next to these people for like 8 hours straight. You have to ask yourself whether or not I can stand being next to them, you know?
I definitely want to second that. You, like, if you're tolerable is like the least. But also, like, are you fun to be around? Can they say, like, oh, you know, I can imagine being friends with this guy. Or I can imagine, like, just, like, having a beer with this guy. That's pretty good sign, I would say. And during an interview, at that point, you shouldn't brag about how smart you are. You shouldn't brag about, I mean, unless they ask, like what about this achievement? You shouldn't brag about your achievements because they've seen everything already. At that point, just, I know it's hard because you're stressed out, but just try to relax, be you. And with the interviews, never try to change the person you are, right? Because you're just doing yourself and the program a disservice. Because let's say you change, like, okay, this program really wants someone who, like, is research heavy and you really hate research. At the end of the day, once you get accepted to that program, you end up, like, disliking your experience and they end up like, well, what the heck? He doesn't like research. So you really made it difficult for you in the program. So just be yourself and the right program will choose you and you'll choose the right program. Or
yeah,
medical school.
I would say, because, I mean, what would you say, what percentage of interviews you've been in have they asked, what's something that wasn't on your resume that you want to tell us?
Yep.
That's one of those questions where
mm-hmm.
you end up kind of going mushy-brained and you're like, oh no.
They're like, well, you have everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or they literally are like, all right, I've read your resume.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're qualified to be here.
Yeah.
So, just ask me questions the whole time.
That was very weird. Yeah, I've had those too. Not when I was applying to med school, but for residency, I've had that. It's like, all right, you have 15 minutes. Ask any question you want.
Yeah. Dang. So, that kind of segues into what we wish we knew mm-hmm. before medical school. And that also kind of segues to an answer, which is, have a hobby
yes
from before medical school, please continue it during medical school.
Mm-hmm.
Because one, your wellness is very important.
Absolutely.
And a lot of us use hobbies as kind of an outlet for stress.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, if you kind of forget the things that make you
yeah
and relieve your stress, then I mean, what's going to keep you sane after 80 hours of studying in a week, you know?
That's true.
So there's that, but then also, I mean, at the end of the day, when you're outside of school, like, who are you as a person?
Yeah.
You're you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The hobbies that you have, the connections that you've made, those are still there. Even if you fail a medical school exam or
mm-hmm.
you feel like you're the dumbest person in your class,
mm-hmm.
at the end of the day, you can at least go outside and call someone or,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if you enjoy playing video games, go play video games. If you enjoy reading books, you can run to the bookstore and get a new book.
Yeah.
You can read it. I mean, those are always there for you. And I'm not going to lie, it's a pretty bad look when you forget those exist.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you go into a residency interview or you go into a medical school interview and all you can talk about is school or what you've been studying or...
You're just a sheep.
Yeah.
You're just a sheep at that point.
The people that are like, all they can do is talk about how much better they are than other people in terms of like grades and stuff like that. It's like, well, why?
Yeah.
Like, why do you think that makes you look like I want to talk to you at that point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember, like, after our first exam in medical school, actually, we all went out to Olive Garden.
Yeah.
I think it was Olive Garden, right?
It was Olive Garden, yeah.
Yeah, and we went, and all of us were talking about, like, what we thought of the exam, how well we thought we did.
No one thought they did well, by the way.
Yeah, and I can confidently say that I think most of us did not do well.
Uh-huh.
So, there was one person that said, look, guys, I really don't care about all this. Can we just, like, not talk about school?
That's true.
That's why we're all together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of clicks to me at that point. I honestly forgot, and I didn't follow this advice. I had kind of thrown myself into school because, you know, after three gap years and years of college, it's like, this is what I wanted to do, and this is what I threw myself into.
Yeah.
This is what I thought my personality had to be. It was school.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what I had dedicated myself to. But
yeah.
Lo and behold, like, there's other stuff outside of it. And I'm kind of glad that my friend was like, please, let's not talk about school.
I think I know who your friend is, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I realized, I was like, oh man, he's right.
Like, yeah. Well, you're trying to have a good time here. Let's not talk about school, like something that's already stressful. Yeah.
Because, I mean, you get into school, and it's like 80 hours of studying, and it's what you've been dreaming about your whole life.
Yeah.
And you can't wait to throw yourself into it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some people are more prone to studying than others. Some people can't handle an 80-hour grind in a week without getting burnt out or having to do extra stuff to kind of relax. And those are the kind of people that when you do go out to dinner after an exam, they're like, what can they talk about? What have they done for the past 3 weeks? They've been throwing themselves at books.
That's true. It's like, I had a friend from the Army. When he came back from the Army, all he could talk about was the Army. So that's how I feel like every time I go to med school and then I come back home to California and then they ask me, oh, how are you? And all I could talk about is just school, like what I learned, what I did. And just like, what happened to, like, I got to remember who I am. What is my life? What do I do for fun? Mm-hmm. And Nick's absolutely right. If you forget, like, what you do for fun, you're in big trouble. Because med school is, it's stressful, and you need an outlet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What would you say are some of your outlets that helped you, like, de-stress during med school?
Yeah, so, I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. I'm that strange individual who is caught up with One Piece.
Oh, nice, nice.
The manga.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I am 1,100 plus chapters deep.
Wow.
I caught up with it during COVID, and I'm not going to lie, when the chapter comes out Sunday mornings, I will be reading it, unless there's a break, which unfortunately there's been quite a few recently.
Mm-hmm.
I also watch the anime, so every Saturday night, that's what I like to do.
Is the anime still going, or is it done?
No, it's still going. They're on a hiatus right now, because...
That's a super long anime.
Currently, to kind of age what this podcast is.
Yeah.
And outside of kind of manga and anime, I like playing video games. Big computer game fan. And then my fiance has got me into fantasy novels, so a lot of times when I'm playing games, there'll be an audiobook in the background, not gonna lie.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Let me see. I would say playing guitar. Playing guitar is probably my biggest outlet. I like to talk to people too. Like, I remember, like, when med school first started, I just like saw all these people from everywhere. You know who they were, where they came from. I just like, oh, what's your name? Where are you from? And I always ask them, what specialty do you want to do? And they would say, oh, I want to do psychiatry. He's like, oh, cool. And then they would tell me where they're from, and I'd be like, ha, that makes sense. That makes sense why you want to do psychiatry or surgery, whatever it may be. So it's kind of like, everyone has their own story, and I love learning about people. Guitar, it was, honestly, guitar has really helped me out during interviews, because they always say, oh, tell me a little bit about yourself. I always mention that, and they always say, oh, can you play Wonderwall by Oasis? Can you play Led Zeppelin? And like, I can't play Led Zeppelin. Like, I like to play, like, sing-along songs. I'm not that great. But I always was able to just bring out a conversation, because music is just universal. Everybody loves music, and that's something I was very thankful I ever picked up, because I can spark a conversation about that with in any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Just be careful if you have a niche hobby, because you're going to put that niche hobby down, and they're going to ask you about it.
Yeah. Don't pretend like you know how to do something when you don't, because they're going to probe you.
Oh, yeah. Especially, I mean, one of these times, there's going to be someone who is into your hobby.
Mm.
And if you tell them that you are really into tennis, for example.
Uh-huh.
They're gonna ask about your tennis ranking,
mm-hmm.
what you've done with it.
Yeah.
And if you stare at them glossy eyed, they're gonna immediately know that you lied to them.
Yeah, don't lie.
And it's the easiest way to not get ranked.
Mm-hmm.
In a residency interview, it's the easiest way to make yourself look like a buffoon. Trust me, don't do it.
Yeah. That's so true. Yeah, just be confident in what you speak. Be confident in like what hobby you take, and the truth is no one's forcing you to take a hobby, so you might as well just do something you love, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, collect stamps.
I think I was helping the interview process and one of the things like this gentleman told me, like what he does for fun is like, I think, help breed frogs. I was like, for fun? Like, it's not for a research lab. He's like, no, this is for fun. It's like, wow, like I want to hear more about that, because everybody says like, what do you do for fun? Like, the stereotypical thing I always hear is like, what? Exercise, right? Work out. Hang out with friends. It's like, all right. So I know what pile I'm putting you in. You're pretty much like everybody else who hangs out with their friends and works out. But this guy was breeding frogs. It's like, wow, this is super different. Like, tell me more about this. Like, how many frogs do you get per litter? If you call it a litter, and like, how do you do that process? And you could see how fascinated he was in. And I was like, I remember this guy as the frog kid. And this guy actually, because of the frogs, I felt like I had a higher chance of getting in than the person who worked out. Or, I mean, it's good to work out, but if you're going to say, like, you exercise, you'd have to, like, go into more depth about it. Like, are you trying to hit a PR? Are you training for the Olympics? But if it's just kind of like a cloud statement, like, oh, I work out, I hang out with friends, then it's not as strong.
Yeah, I have to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Did the frog person make it?
I don't know. It was, I interviewed him, I think 2 years ago. 2 years ago? Yeah, 2 years ago.
Well, I hope the frog person.
Yeah, same here.
I hope you made it.
Yeah, I hope it got into whatever school he got into.
And honestly, that's a wild hobby.
Yeah. That's, I don't know if it was damaging the ecosystem or helping it, but that's crazy.
Hey, you don't know if it's an invasive species.
Right, that's true, right. Yeah, so I think that's another thing too, like people try so hard to be normal and to fit in that they don't mention like the wonky activities that they do on their own. Mm-hmm. Like if that guy tried to like be like everybody else, I would have never found out about the frogs. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that he told me.
And look at that. I mean, Alvin here has probably interviewed like at least a dozen medical school candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Years,
yeah, that's true. Who do I remember? Is that frog kid? Yeah, so just remember what would you like this person to remember you as? And there is no right answer, right? There's no right answer. You don't have to say like being normal is the bare minimum, but being memorable is it's key. It really is.
Yeah, so is there anything else that you can really think of that you mm-hmm. kind of wish someone had told you before going into medical school, or if you could go back to right when you accepted
acceptance
to medical school, what would you tell Alvin then?
Ooh, that's a good one. Okay, so I did a lot of work experience. I didn't do as much volunteering, and that's I believe Nick did do volunteering, but he didn't do as much as you didn't do as much as you wanted to, right? Because of the work. Yeah, I would say, yeah, I didn't do as much volunteer experience because of the work as well. I wish I volunteered more. Research is super important. If you get yourself like into a research group. I would say if you can, try to build some skills. Like, that could be any skill. Like, learning an instrument, learning Spanish. That's something I would have done. Shadowing. Shadowing is a must. Is it a requirement or is it highly recommended?
I think it's highly recommended.
Yeah.
And honestly, if I was a medical school admissions committee and I confidently wanted to say that I was willing to consider anyone, then I would probably lower my bar for at least shadowing because it is very difficult.
Yeah.
If you don't have connections or...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, say you don't have money and you're, like, taking gap years.
Yeah.
You have to work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what time are you going to have the shadow? And, like, if you're in school and you're trying your hardest to pass these exams, what time are you going to have the shadow, you know?
That's true.
But
yeah.
I would say highly encouraged because...
Highly encouraged.
It's a case of, do you know what you're getting yourself into?
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
Shadow?
Yeah. So those are very vital. Like it's not required. Not everybody needs it, but it'll definitely help you out. Not just like for your application, but as Nick mentioned, it'll help you understand what the future holds for you. Let's see. Something I wish I could tell myself before starting medical school, which is really hard because my mentality was super fixed. It's like I had to know everything. I always need to know everything. Is you're going to get humbled in medical school. I'm not sure about Nick if he's experienced this, but for the first time in your life, you're like, I don't know. I don't know everything. And you're going to walk into a test saying, if they ask me this, I have no idea how to answer this because I was too busy studying this. And you realize that every specialty is like a Yoda in their own way. And you can't really talk down on anybody because they're very intelligent in their own way. Yeah, so I would humble myself and say, it's okay if you don't know everything, just... put the hours in, study what you have to study, and you'll be okay.
Yeah, I agree. And there's definitely been times where I'm like, yeah, I have no clue what's going on. I'm not gonna
yeah.
lie.
Like, it's just noise to me.
There's always going to be some obscure facts.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not going to lie. I don't know if you've hit that point.
Yeah.
Where, how are you going to be as an attending? Because...
Mm-hmm.
I can guarantee, like, any student that I have, I'm going to try and find a question mm-hmm. that they don't know.
Yeah.
Because that's where you teach them.
That's true. He's going to be the one that pimps. And by the way, those of you who don't know what pimping is basically when they ask you questions and they continue asking you questions until you're like, I have no idea.
I actually had a surgery attendant kind of explain it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, look, I'm not doing this to make you feel bad. That's not the point of this. The mm-hmm. point of this is to kind of figure out what you don't know, so I know what I can teach you.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's more of a learning experience, although I do agree it makes you feel terrible.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Because, I'm not going to lie, when you're getting asked rapid-fire questions, and there may be times where you know the answers to, like, the first 10, but when you hit that 11th one, he's going to look at you like you're the first person. Even though
uh-huh.
you literally batted 10 for one uh-huh. long, you know?
And sometimes, like, you know the answer, but maybe, like, in that moment, you're a little bit anxious, a little bit stressed, and it just, like, flies off your head.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then they ask it a weird way, and you're like, oh, I don't know. And then they answer it, and you're like, oh.
Oh, that's what you, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh, well, I knew that answer.
Uh-huh.
Why did you ask it like that? But, I mean, that gets to kind of what I wish I could have told myself.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of undergrad for me was kind of memorizing and brute force memorizing.
Yeah.
And I can confidently say if you try to go through medical school and brute force memorize everything, either you have an eidetic memory
mm-hmm.
and you'll go as far as you can possibly go.
Yeah.
Or you're going to hit the point where it's too much information.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I wish I had told myself, like, understanding why something is the way it is a lot easier to remember.
Mm-hmm.
And all the random tidbits of information about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to lie, there are some topics in medical school that are just brute force memorization.
Yeah.
Like microbiology.
Microbio.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Drugs.
Yeah, drugs. Bugs and drugs, that's a tough one. I think in our fundamentals, we had like 1 week, if not less, to memorize like all the viruses. Remember that? Memorize all like the bugs. It's like, wow, that's... And some of us have never even like taken, I mean, I think microbiology was actually a requirement, right?
Yeah, I think it
yeah.
was.
But there's like some stuff like tapeworms I've never heard of.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy.
Cestodes, nematodes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Trematodes.
And like Nick mentioned, it's okay not to know the little details of every subject. Mm-hmm. The bigger picture will take you a long way.
Reports will focus on like the basic information about things, and how if you know the basic information and it can apply it, you'll actually get a lot further than if you try to memorize everything. And there's actually I looked it up, there's a thought philosophy for NBME questions where they design the question so that you have all the information you could need in the question. And they kind of gauge whether a question is good based off of whether or not you can answer it by the final line of the sentence without even looking at the multiple choice answers.
Wow, that's crazy.
Like, you have to be able to have a solid answer formed before you even reach the end of that question.
Mm.
So that's how they design their questions. They're literally trying to make it as straightforward as possible. They're not trying to trip you up. Some of the question banks that you do during medical school will purposely try to trip you up.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true.
And, I mean, I'm not going to lie. When you feel like you're the dumbest person in the room, or when you get something horribly wrong, you remember it a lot better than the times where you answer everything right. Because we tend to remember things or situations where we failed a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
So I can understand like question banks and like low pressure situations.
That's so true.
Trying to trip you up to make you remember trip ups and the minutiae. So it's pretty well designed. I would say it's designed with a reason.
Yeah, I definitely think it's very helpful. And like, don't be too hard on yourself if you get all the questions. I remember I was doing UWorld. Get all the questions wrong, like 10 questions in a row wrong, it's okay. Because that just means you have to learn this, right? That means you don't know it. And even if you get the question right, but you're kind of guessing, did you really get that question right? I'm not sure if you felt that same way, Nick. It's like, I still got to study this because I'm not too solid on the concept.
Uh-huh.
So it's okay to, like, because, yeah, you'll see it. When you're taking the questions, you'll be like, I've never seen these terminology before. I've never seen these, like, diagnoses before. And it's almost like, in a sense, that you're kind of guessing. Like, this sounds about right. And you actually learn with, like, the explanation with the question, which I've never experienced before in my entire life until med school.
Yeah, and we can dive into the topic that is Anki.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you're going to be using it in medical school.
That's crazy.
I'll let Alvin explain it.
Yeah, it's wild because I didn't even know Anki existed. I don't know about you, Nick. I didn't know it existed until I went to med school. And people were doing it before med school, like using Anki for Kaplan or whatever. And basically, Anki is like this flashcard system where it can like have a sentence or a question and have a blank. And you say, what's in that blank? And then you say the answer to yourself, and you press the space bar, and bam, it'll show the answer. If you get it right, you press like the good button. If you get it wrong, you press try again. And the whole point of this is like spaced repetition. And through that spaced repetition is really how you, like, end up memorizing all these facts. Now, is it good for memorizing? I would say yes. Is it good for keeping all that information in the back of your head? Yes. Now, is it good for teaching concepts? For me, it didn't work. Nick, did it help you with the concepts, or?
No.
Yeah.
I would say it's not designed to teach you concepts. It's designed for raw memorization.
Yeah. Yeah.
During our first couple of years in medical school.
Yeah, they solely...
Yeah, it leads into another piece of advice, actually, is, like, if you only use Anki as your primary source of studying, you're not going to go very far. You kind of have to understand the information that you're spacebarring through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone reaches a point when there are 500-plus cards a day deep.
Yeah.
That they're just memorizing what the card looks like more than the information on the card.
Mm-hmm.
We're pretty good at, like, remembering, like, visual information.
Yeah.
And so I would say this happened to me pretty early on, like a month in, that I would just hit the space bar after looking at the card for a half second, and I thought to myself, there's no way I actually read the card. I just remembered what the card looked like, and I remembered what the
answer
the
was.
Side of the card
was. Yeah.
Like. And
sometimes, like, what did I even read?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Or, I don't know if you felt this, but after, like, doing Anki for, like, half an hour or an hour, you're like, what did I just do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, honestly. And it gets down to, like, how do you learn as a person?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know if you remember back in the day, they would have, like, learning styles. So, like, if you're a visual learner, stuff like that. Like, I remember a lot of stuff when I listen to it.
Mm.
So, I actually put my Anki card says text-to-speech, which helps me remember.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not going to lie, there's the weird, like, devil on your shoulder that's, like, with text-to-speech Anki, you could do it while driving. Don't do it. Please don't get in an accident. But this is your little fun fact. You can do Anki text-to-speech.
Wow, that's crazy.
So if you're an audio learner like me, mm-hmm. it does help. And it really got me out of the remembering what the card looks like, because I mm-hmm. had to wait for that audio to finish going.
Yeah.
And process it, and then flip the card, and then I would hear the rest of the card, and I got it to the point where it would speak the extra section. Mm-hmm. And the extra section of the Anki cards, if you're using something like Anki, actually has explanations
mm-hmm.
for, like, all of the stuff that you're reading.
Yeah.
And so that can really help cement it, but as I was alluding to earlier, using it as a primary source, you're not going to go very far. You have to do something
mm-hmm.
else. And a lot of people are using, like, Boards resources,
mm-hmm.
like Boards and Beyond. And,
yeah.
What are the other ones? Pathoma's good for...
Pathoma's good.
Pre-med, or not pre-med, but, like, the basic sciences stuff. And then...
Ooh, there's another one. Sketchy. Sketchy.
Sketchy is for some people.
Sketchy came in clutch for me.
Yeah, it's good for Bugs and Drugs, I'd say.
If you're visual, that it definitely helps out.
Yeah, I love Sketchy, honestly, for mm-hmm. like a lot of things. Like, I remember the pictures pretty
yeah.
well. So having, like, an anchor to try and remember those niche facts has
mm-hmm.
been really useful. I will say, if you're using Board resources, it might not be the worst idea to get, like, a month of each of them.
Yeah.
Figure out which ones work for you before you slam down to your subscription.
Yeah.
Because those are expensive.
Absolutely.
And med school is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it's super scary when you get that acceptance into medical school if you do not have money lying around.
That's so true.
Realizing that you're going to be six figures in debt. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't even want to say it's difficult to get six figures in debt in medical school. Like,
oh, not at all.
I feel like after
mm-hmm.
the first year, you'll be in six figures in debt. And
yeah.
Like, you'll just be like, oh, no, what did I sign on for?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty good motivator.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I've come too far. Can't go
fail,
back. Yeah.
If I fail, I am so far in debt, I don't know how I'm coming out of this.
Mm-mm. You may never come out of it. But, yeah, it's definitely something that pushes a lot of us. Something I did want to mention is I just remembered this actually. When I was applying to medical school, I wasn't too sure what the difference between MD, DO, Caribbean medical schools. So maybe in terms of, like, gap years and becoming more competitive and then going to these different types of medical schools, what could you tell our listeners about, like in terms of competitiveness and, like, what the difference is, and can you still be what you want to be at the end of the day by going to these different medical schools?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of layers to this question,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think this is the way it should be, but if you go to a United States allopathic medical school, which is MD,
yeah.
Your chances of getting into a residency program and getting into a competitive one are a lot better
mm-hmm.
than if you go to an osteopathic or DO medical school, for example, or a Caribbean school.
Yeah.
or there's also foreign medical graduates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They probably have the most difficult into getting to a residency.
Yeah, I don't personally agree with a lot of the biases against some of those schools, just because, I mean, at the end of the day,
we're all doctors.
There's that, but then also, like, what are we learning that a USDO isn't?
Yeah.
And the USDO is taking extra exams to even get their foot in the door.
They take everything we take, plus the complex. So it's like they're taking about 2 times more board exams than we are.
And not only that, but they're using the same board resources as us.
Mm-hmm.
So most of medical school nowadays, as sad as it is, we're not going to lectures. And we're not going to, like, we're not watching in-house lectures. Some schools have in-house exams where it's tailored around the curriculum in their lectures, so you're forced to go. But I would say those schools and then schools where it's optional are pretty far and few between.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like sad to me that a USDO or someone who went to a Caribbean school, you don't know why they went there. I mean, maybe they're bad test takers.
Yeah.
And they choked on the MCAT or something. Maybe it's closer to home for them. Maybe it was cheaper. Maybe they got offered scholarships. I don't know what situation they're in.
Mm-hmm.
But it really sucks when my application gets thrown next to theirs in a residency program, and theirs may just be filtered out before even being looked at.
Yeah.
Because of where they're from. And like, my opinion is that we're all probably equally qualified. It's just some of us got put in more fortunate situations than others.
Mm.
And that's completely ignoring, like, the foreign medical graduate discussion, because a lot of foreign medical graduates,
They're geniuses.
Some of them are already practicing physicians.
Mm-hmm.
Who, if you throw them onto the wards,
they're ready to go.
They could literally do everything that we would end up learning how to do.
And probably even using less resources.
Yeah, they don't need to be, like, taught as much.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, they get put on teams with people like me who've never practiced as a physician in a day of our lives. And they're teaching us.
Like, yeah.
They're going to be helping teach us. And it's like, why is there the bias? I get that, like, say international medical graduate of, like, a Caribbean school, say they just did bad on the MCAT or something, like, they got, like, a 505, that was, like, the one acceptance they got, and then they get to step two, and then they ace it, they get, like, a 280, or something like that, like, I can probably say that they would still be looked at as less than someone who got, like, a 260 from a USMD school, which I'm like,
it's crazy. Really sad.
That's crazy.
It's really sad. It's something I wish I knew before. This is pre-med Alvin, right? Which is, like, a completely different human. I feel like, oh, MDs are clearly, like, the totem pole. MDs are better than DOs. DOs are better than Caribbeans. And now going into and then experiencing working or, like, being alongside DOs, we're all the same. We're all learning the same thing. And then when you're talking to an attending, whether they're MD, DO, you don't even know. They're all so knowledgeable. But there is a bias, unfortunately, that does exist. Like, you look at a lot of, I'm from California, so I did a lot of research on California. You look at the California programs and you can see what percent of each, like, let's see, US MD, DO, or International Caribbean, you can see how many USMDs we take over DOs. And, like, there's definitely a bias. And unfortunately, even though the DOs take 2 times more board exams, they're learning OMM at the same time, they're still not, I don't think they're getting the kind of appreciation that they should receive.
And I will add on, if you want to do certain specialties, it's very, very difficult.
Yeah.
To get into, if you even come from a USDO school.
Mm-hmm. It's not impossible, though. I've seen, like, you know, vascular surgeons, neurosurgeons that are DOs, but they had to work a lot to prove themselves.
Yeah, and it sucks because it's, like, they have to work that much harder to even get their foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy because, like, some specialties, neurosurgery, for example, or dermatology, like, if you're a USDO, you end up having to have a higher bar to be considered. It's just wild to me because, like I said, like, we're learning the same stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, why does the USDO have to have 30 publications to be considered? That's... The USMD would be 15 or something like that, you know?
Yeah. So, when it comes down to, like, what should you choose between, like, USMD, DO, Caribbean, what advice would you give to listeners if they had to choose between one of the three and their situations?
I would say, honestly, just apply broadly and be realistic about your chances of getting into a place because it sucks that it is the way it is, but if you do poorly on standardized exams, if you bomb the MCAT, then you may not get interviews for the schools that you want to be interviewed at. Your only option may be, like, a lower tier Caribbean school or some other school that you weren't originally considering. Yeah. But, like, at the end of the day, you would become a doctor.
Yes.
And I have seen people, like, if you're a hard worker and you feel like you could get to where you want to be even from a Caribbean school, then do it. But I will say it's a tough road. It's very difficult.
Yeah. You're just constantly having to prove yourself in the school amongst your colleagues and your future colleagues.
And I'm not going to lie, patients can look you up. They're going to see where you're from. And, I mean, 9 times out of 10, that's not going to matter. Yeah. Most patients are only looking to see if their doctor came from Harvard.
Yeah.
If they came from, like, Mass General.
Yeah. Or,
like, they look for Ivy Leagues, and they say if it's an Ivy League doctor, it's great. But, like, if you come from a random state school, they're going to be like, okay, whatever. Like, I don't know where that is.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're a doctor or whatever. But, like, I have to say, if you have the choice, I feel like it would be safer to pick a USMD school, as sad as that is. I shouldn't even say as sad as that is, because, like, I mean, if you have the option to go to a USMD school, like, you're obviously very well qualified. I just don't want people to completely give up on their dreams because their only option is a Caribbean school.
Yeah.
Because, honestly, at the end of the day, we're all doctors. And, I mean, this advice even goes completely out the window if you want to do something like primary care, family medicine.
That's true.
Or even emergency medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of the less competitive specialties, I mean, you'll get interviews.
Yeah.
If you are well qualified.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you do well on your board exams and you have an ounce of research, and you do extracurriculars, like, your leaders of clubs, or you join national societies, or national colleges for your specialty. Like, you can, you can honestly go pretty far.
Yeah.
So, it's a case of, it depends on what you want to do, it depends on where you want to be in life, it depends on your options at the time, it depends on how.
Yeah.
If you are at test taking, I would say there's probably a large correlation between how you do on the MCAT and how you do on board exams. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's really situation dependent. I would say entering medical school, I'm pretty old compared to the rest of my classmates. I'll be graduating at 30 years old. That doesn't seem too old in the general population, but versus all these youngins in, like, the medical class, it's pretty old. And, like, to me, I thought, like, I applied DO and MD, right? And I think I had 2 MD interviews and, like, 11 DO interviews. And at that time, I was like, still, like, mid-20s And I said, no, I'm not going to wait another year just to hopefully get into like an MD program. I'll take whatever takes me. And yeah, it really depends. Like if you don't get the school that you want, and I have some friends that are just strictly only MD, and if they're willing to take another gap year, retake the MCAT, or like solidify their application again, more power to them for doing that. But some people don't have that time. They just want to start medical school. Mm-hmm. So it's really up to you on what you're willing to go through. If you want to go through the other year, then go for it. If you're just ready to learn and become a doctor, then go for that as well.
Yeah. And I agree with that advice. I actually had a physician that I was working with. I was cocky at the time. I didn't even know USDO schools or foreign schools. I didn't know the difference, honestly, before coming to medical school. And so I was like, I'm only applying to USMD schools.
Oh, yeah.
I know I'm good enough. I can do that.
We all thought we were good enough. That's
Yeah. I mean, you don't go to medical school if you don't think you're good enough.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But I had that mentality, and I told that to one of the doctors I worked with, and he literally looked at me and he was like, "So you're okay with not being a doctor because of your pride?"
Mm.
And I was like,
"Wow, that's deep."
Yeah. So it's like, take that as you will, but
yeah.
Honestly, I don't think there should be bias against people from different backgrounds, especially not when we're all trying to go to the same place.
Yeah.
We're all trying to feel included.
Mm-hmm.
We're all trying to feel like we belong. And it's like, if we all want to feel included and we all want to feel like we belong, then why are we holding these biases against people?
Yeah.
Especially when the only difference between me and someone who came from a USDO school or a foreign medical school is a bad test day. Like, that's probably the only difference between me and a lot of other medical students. It's just one bad test day.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true. And tests, they don't change your value. You are still who you are. And, you know, that goes a long way. Never forget like your why. That's a big thing. Never forget your drive that I want to be a doctor. Now, do I want to be a doctor at a super prestigious school? That's totally up to you. But if you just want to be a doctor and you want to help people, then you will find out what's the right path for you. Thank you so much, Nick. That was amazing. It got to a very deep conversation. I love that. And I hope like our listeners learn a little bit more about what gap years are, what they can do in their gap years, some advice with interviews, what they can use to like study for like the MCAT, like I mentioned, Anki. I liked how we touched upon like difference between US, MD, DOs, and Caribbeans, because that's something I know I was like trying to figure out when I was applying as well. So like, do you have any words of wisdom for our listeners before we head off? Mm-hmm.
If it ends up being 10 gap years,
yeah.
At the end of the day, you would be a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So never give up.
That's true. Nick and I are living proof that gap years will still take you where you need to be.
Yeah. All it can help you do is grow as a person.
That's absolutely true. Thank you so much, Nick. Thank you for showing up on my podcast. And for everybody who's listening, we wish you the best of luck.
Mm-hmm.
No problem. All right. Take care, everybody.